Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Hey, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I'm glad to be back. Welcome back. Welcome, everybody. This is the show where we don't take calls. After all, you worked hard all week. The last thing I should expect from you is to have to help me carry a show. For that, I have here in studio my extremely attractive audio engineer. She helps me carry the show. You can just take it easy. Sit back and relax. All you have to do is listen. And you don't even have to do that. You could turn it off at any time. Really take it easy. You can pause it. Come back later. If I offend you, you could turn me off. You can pause me. Anyway, where to start? Did I already did my intro with the whole we? Yeah, I feel. Anyway, Mohammed is on track to be the most popular name for newborn boys in Holland. For this Holland, I said. For the second straight year. That's from the Culture Clash file. Was that a band in the 80s, the Culture Clash? No? Anyway.
I don't know, maybe.
So there you have it, Mohammed. All the various spellings, you see. And then there you have the decline and fall of Western civilization into the hands of the Mohammedans. I mean, literally the Mohammedans. They're naming their kids Mohammed. Anyway, what does that have to do with you or me or anything else? Well, I mean, it's Holland. Isn't that where the pilgrims came from? They initially fled England. Is that the...
To Holland.
Yes, because my extremely attractive audio engineer is currently studying the pilgrims with our homeschool children. And so all the things that I forgot... That's a great thing about homeschooling. All the stuff that you forgot about school, you get to learn again as an adult. And so we learned that the pilgrims fled England, they ended up in Holland, and then their kids started getting their noses pierced and tattoos, and so they fled to the wilderness of America. I'm not sure about the tattoos or the nose piercing, but they were afraid of their kids becoming too worldly with the Dutch kids and all of that. So bad news on that is there's nowhere left to flee after America. Now maybe Antarctica? Anyway, there's nowhere left to flee. This is it, folks. We have to hold the fort right here. If this is the hill we're going to die on, we're going to die on it. This is the hill worth dying on. All right. Now, I talked last week, or last time we were together, about the effects of the climate change nut job scaring the children. And I have, let's see. Well, I have first... Let's start with the people who are terrified of technology. Like here from the economics file, we have a professor. I pulled this down from the Daily Star in London, which is probably some disreputable tabloid. This professor in computer engineering, Dr. Subhash Kak. Kak? K-A-K. Subhash Kak. He says a third of all jobs are going to be lost when self-driving cars come out. He says a third of the people in any advanced economy are engaged in transportation, and their jobs will be gone. They'll be gone as soon as self-driving cars come on. And he says, why would professors like me be needed if the lectures of the best instructors in the world are recorded and made available on the internet? Now that you can't argue with.
That's great.
We might not need this scaremonger. He talks about department stores. Yes, they're closing because of Amazon. Yes, Amazon's using robots. He predicts a world where robots render humans unable to work at all. He says we won't be able to work at all because machines will do everything cheaper and they'll work longer hours without getting tired. There'll be massive unemployment. Massive. A third. He says people want to be useful. And work provides meaning. And so the world will sink into despair. Despair, I tell you. So this Luddite professor believes that the self-driving cars are going to lead to mass despair. I frankly disagree. I think we'll find other things to do. Yeah, I think that if you replace everyone who picks things off shelves and brings them to the counter, that those people will find something else to do that's probably more interesting than going back into the warehouse and searching for box number RQ11405, bringing it up to the front, checking somebody out on a register. Yeah, I think we could find robots to do that. And then we'll all find more interesting things to do. But I wanted to get to this. This is more to the point. I have a professor from the University of Arizona. So we'll just call her Professor Sabrina. We changed some names here on the show to avoid giving credence to the ignorant and the stupid. Although this is not ignorant or stupid. I think she has a point here. Some of the things she talks about reflect ignorance and stupidity in the population, but I think the points she's making here are accurate. She says she's authored a paper, by the way, for whatever that's worth, there at the University of Arizona. Professor Sabrina says climate change is a persistent global stressor. People are having restless nights, feelings of loneliness and lethargy as they lay in bed at night worrying about climate change. She says climate researchers and activists suffer from depression and PTSD-like symptoms. It's like they've been in a war zone. They're scaring themselves half to death, scaring themselves into the need for antidepressant drugs and everything else. Well, what else do we have here? And I think she's right. And I think there's a lot of kids out there, an awful lot of young people being educated in the government-controlled school systems, who are actually fearful and depressed and scared that every time they exhale, they're destroying the planet. And I think people who preach that kind of stuff, they should at the very least be slapped across the face. And at the most, they should possibly be arrested and prosecuted for child abuse, for crying out loud. Meteorologist Eric Halfhaus says in the article here from climatedepot.com, he says, I know many people feel deep despair about the climate, especially after the election. Yeah. And it's because of this, there are days where, this is a meteorologist, a weatherman, okay? He says, there are days when I literally can't work, and I think we don't deserve this planet. Well, maybe he doesn't, I don't know. Anyway, you know, preaching this catastrophism of global climate change and imminent disaster, along with Darwinian evolution and the Big Bang Theory, you're basically teaching kids that you came from nothing, you're going nowhere, and you're a real problem the whole time you're here. It's a wonder that the kids aren't stressed out and on Ritalin. Well, all this catastrophism and Darwinism, it causes mental illness and depression. And deeper, as I'll get to some of the bloodshed, just a bloodbath since we last got together. I believe that raising children in this type of environment makes murder and suicide easier to justify in the minds of more and more borderline unstable people. And so just cut it out. Shut up with all that. Stop freaking the kids out, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. The bloodbath since last time we got together. We had another deputy sheriff shot dead here in the Denver metro area. Deputy Gum. He was shot and killed on a domestic call January 24th, just a few days ago. And you remember Deputy Parrish killed on New Year's Eve, December 31st. So in less than a month, we've got two sheriff's deputies shot and killed here in the Denver metro area by borderline unstable people who decided that they would shoot and kill a law enforcement officer. That kind of thing did not cross the mind of young people a generation ago. We had a mass shooting near Pittsburgh today or last night. Yeah, at a car wash. Matt, three people dead, I think, and the shooter is going to die, last I read. Anyway, it was interesting reading the news report of the mass shooting there near Pittsburgh, south of Pittsburgh. The police spokesman came on and said there's no threat to the community and no imminent danger. Well, I beg to differ. Although I respect the officer and his opinion, I beg to differ. I think there is a threat to the community. I think that we're all in imminent danger because the violence is to a level that should be intolerable and is frankly frightening. I'll bet there were more people murdered in America in the last 48 hours than in Kabul. And in Kabul, by the way, the Taliban blew up hundreds of people, at least 100 killed so far. They had a bomb disguised as an ambulance. And they blew up hundreds of people, over 100 confirmed dead already. But there were more people murdered in America in the last 48 hours than in Kabul. That's my bet. And not to be outdone, of course, here in Denver, last night we had a mass shooting of our own. Three people shot, two dead. Here in Denver last night. It's just another night. I'm sure you haven't heard about it out there in America because you're reading the stories about the mass shootings in your town. So you can't, you don't have time to stop and check in on the bloodbath in Denver because you've got your own going on. You can only keep up with so much. Nine News posted on their website a report of the most recent mass shooting last night in Denver. They said police are investigating a shooting that killed two. A shooting that killed two. Well, there's probably a person involved, but if you read Nine News, you maybe wouldn't know. I don't. Anyway. Well, I beg to differ that there's no threat to the community. No imminent danger. I think there is. And I think that the lawyers who are running this operation, they need to be held to account for the level of violence that's taking place. It's just not tolerable. And so you've got young people being raised to believe they came from nowhere, they're going nowhere, they're basically nothing. And the whole time they're here, they're destroying the planet. So they're depressed, they end up on drugs, and I don't know, it's easier to shoot somebody when you're whacked out on drugs and convinced that you're basically meaningless or problematic at best. And so, hence I encourage you people out there to get your kids out of the government schools so that they don't have to be raised in such an environment. And you know, they get out there in the public schools, they could walk away from any godliness that you're able to instill in them as young people. They can be robbed of that in the government schools and in the environment of humanist catastrophism in which the children are being raised. Now, speaking of believing in God, we hear from the Real Religion File. A new survey is out. Yes, another survey from Britain. And they asked non-believers, people who say they do not believe in God, atheists and agnostics. They asked them if they ever pray. And they, 1 in 4, about 25% admitted that when they're really scared and things get tough, they pray to God. And these are atheists and unbelievers. They pray for comfort or to feel less lonely. A report on the survey as found in the Daily Mail. They report that church attendance in Great Britain has dropped from nearly 7 million to barely 3 million in the last 45 years. 80, 90, 2000, 2010, is that 1980, is that 35 years? That's 35 years. Obviously, I'm not in charge of teaching our children math. 1980 to 2015 would be 35 years. So church attendance has dropped by more than half. Yeah. Anyway, this new survey was carried out by ComRes on behalf of the Christian Aid Agency, as reported in the Daily Mail. Of those who pray. Now get this, ladies and gentlemen. According to the survey says, of those who pray, less than half think that God actually hears them. Talk about a depressed state of being, for crying out loud. So less than half of these atheists believe God actually hears them, Well, that's interesting. anyway. Oh, no, this wasn't the atheist. This was other people. Anyway, less than half of the people who pray think that God actually hears them. And I'm here to tell you that a majority of the other half mistakenly believe that God is listening to them. That's right. Yes, go check it out. Proverbs 28. No, I'm not going to give you the verse. You look it up yourself.
God is merciful. God is good. Lord have mercy.
I wish you would.
Doug McBurney, and thank you, Billy. As the media erupts with an obsession with Donald Trump versus Jay-Z, have you heard this?
No.
Oh, I found Jay-Z is a male. I did not know that. I thought Jay-Z was a female.
Huh?
It's a boy. He's a boy. I mean, I'm not. Jay-Z is a male entertainer.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought it was a girl. Is that right? That's Beyonce's husband? I have no idea. Now, Beyonce, I knew that was a girl just by the name. So anyway, while the media debates the value of the Trump versus Jay-Z Twitter war, want to let you people know that Turkey has invaded Syria. No big deal. I mean, it's certainly not a Twitter war, but Turkey has invaded Syria. They're battling against the U.S.-backed Kurdish militia, the YPG. They're pounding them with rockets and artillery. And the Kurds are firing back. And there's a full-on battle going on. Turkey calls it Operation Olive Branch, which is kind of an odd name for when you're launching rockets and artillery. But, you know, Turkey considers the Kurds of the YPG a terrorist organization. And if you've done your research on the YPG, Turkey rightfully considers them terrorists. But the U.S. has been backing the YPG against the Islamic State, who are really worse terrorists. Definitely worse. But they're both basically Muslim maniacs, both groups. The ISIS, the YPG. Anyway, the U.S. is in bed with a bad proxy in the YPG. And now the question is, will America abandon them or will we fight Turkey? Well, if history is any guide, as far as the Kurds are concerned, we will abandon them. And Turkey will slaughter the YPG. And, there you have that. So, anyway, let's get back to the Twitter war with Donald Trump versus the recently gender revealed Jay-Z. So I never heard of a gender reveal party. The first time I ever heard that term was at church this morning.
Me too.
I never heard of that. First of all, your child doesn't have a gender. Your child has a sex. It's male or female. Gender is a literary term that can be somewhat fluid. A gender reveal party. Okay.
Yeah, I never heard of it.
I don't know. I never heard of that. I didn't know that we did that, but apparently we do.
Who does?
I don't know who does. I don't know. Anyway, but let's move on from that. Jack Phillips at Masterpiece Cake Shop is now being sued over gender reveal cakes, which I didn't even know existed. But leave it to Jack Phillips to step in the middle of that again. he's the fellow who was sued by the queers for not wanting to make a cake for their filthy, disgusting, alleged wedding. their giant middle finger to God, and Jack didn't want to participate, so the queers sued him, and now he's being sued by some other deviants, I'm sure. Somebody wanted the gender revealed as, I don't know, a blank space with no check. Optional, we're going to teach. We'll find out what gender our child is. And Jack was probably like, well, I'm not going to. I'd just rather not do that. Anyway, Jack's being sued again. All right, now, where do I go from there? Oh, now, speaking of all that kind of stuff, I want you people to know that my extremely attractive audio engineer and I, we are a true, what you would call a global couple. We're more than an interracial couple. An interracial couple could be a black kid and a white girl. They grew up in the same town. They end up getting married. And that's wonderful. But they're not really a global couple. Now, me, I'm from Buffalo, New York, and my extremely attractive audio engineer is from the other side of the planet. Naha, Okinawa, Japan. So we're a global couple. And the other night, my extremely attractive audio engineer, she offered a global solution to the recent battle over Donald Trump's offer of citizenship to the Dreamers in order to get the wall and all of that. And in true global, what would we call it? With global peace and harmony in mind, she offered the solution. Have the Dreamers build the wall. I think it's brilliant. You could be a citizen. Here's a shovel. And you're going to build the wall. And as soon as it's done, you can get in line to apply for citizenship. It's a global solution from a global couple. And we offer it to Mr. Trump and Ms. Pelosi and Mr.
Chuck
Schumer. We offer it to them free. They don't even have to pay us a consulting fee. There you go. A global solution to an international problem. Fairly brilliant, I must say. All right. Now, speaking of global issues, Cape Town, South Africa. This is from the Decline and Fall file. Cape Town, South Africa may be the first major city in the world to actually run out of water. At least that's the headline in the Daily Mail. They report that Cape Town has been facing the dual challenge of ballooning populations and shrinking resources. And the government there in Cape Town is predicting day zero. That's the day they run out of water, at least on paper. And they're saying it's probably going to occur on April 12th. But some fear it could come sooner. Those are the kids who've been told that they're destroying the planet. They're laying awake at night in fear that day zero could come sooner. Now, keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that if Cape Town, South Africa does run out of water, governing officials will make arrangements so that water will continue to run in hospitals, schools, and for communal taps in poor areas. Also, downtown areas and some hotels could be exempt from the water cutoff for the sake of tourists. Wait a minute. Exempt. I thought the headline says that Cape Town's going to run dry, but here it looks like maybe the government's going to shut off the water. Now, they've got a problem there, trust me. Water's a problem. There's a big, long drought, and it's an issue. But this doesn't look like they're actually going to run out. It looks as if the government is going to selectively shut off the water. Scientists at the University of Cape Town, they say man-made global warming may have contributed. That's it. The governing officials in Cape Town are upset at the climate deniers who won't curtail their water usage. And so they're going to shut it off. The water and sanitation minister insists that the city should do more to crack down on people using too much water. This is the 21st century. You've got a governing bureaucrat who says we need to crack down on people who are using too much water. Cape Town residents have been advised recently to limit their showers to fewer than 90 seconds.
What?
And collect the used water in a bucket to flush the toilet.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, that's fine. All fine and good, I suppose, if you want to live like a third world. I mean, please.
Well, if you don't have water.
Well, I guess they're running out of water.
Well,
So it's bad government and bad religion that has caused this problem. Because with the human resources available in Cape Town, South Africa, the millions of people, if their creativity and ingenuity were unleashed with freedom, they would solve the water problem. But instead, they're cowering in bed thinking they're destroying the planet and that they don't want to go out and do anything because their carbon footprint is bad. You've taught a generation to cower instead of go out and risk and try new things and, for crying out loud, build a dam or two. Please. You could have saved some water when there wasn't a drought. Had you thought about that? Reservoirs, cisterns. But no, that takes ingenuity and human creativity and the willingness to risk in a free society where you could make a lot of money, but South Africa doesn't have that. Basically, it's a socialist hellhole is what it is. And they're going to, they're going to ration water severely, and it would not surprise me if they actually run out. They could actually run out of water. At which point, someone will stand up athwart the insanity of their crumbling civilization and start to do something meaningful and sensible. Running out of water will really get your attention, from what I understand. I see those documentaries of the people stuck in the desert. Well, that really gets your attention. And quickly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, speaking of the decline and fall file, we have another article here from CNN that lodges haphazardly in the decline and fall file this week. Nancy Pelosi has announced that she will be a guest on RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. Have you heard of this show? No, I'm not surprised. It's a reality competition that features drag queens. And Nancy Pelosi is going to be a guest judge. This show is on VH1, which we haven't watched ever. I've never watched. Maybe by accident I saw VH1, maybe, at some point. CNN says the California Democrat and first female Speaker of the House joins a handful of other celebrity guest judges, including Vanessa Hudgens, Titus Burgess, and Kristen Chenoweth, none of whom I've heard of. These are celebrities. Nancy Pelosi, well, at least I've heard of her. And she'd fit right in at a drag queen show, right? I mean, she looks like a drag queen. She looks like a guy who's trying, a really old, sick, frail guy who's trying to pull off the look as a girl, Nancy Pelosi. So how did we get to this in America where a nationally recognized politician can announce that she's going to be participating in a drag queen show and the collective response of the body politic is to barely yawn? This should be shocking that a politician would participate in something so blatantly immoral and destructive of the values that we're trying to teach our children. It should be, but it's not. And that's why this is the decline and fall. I'm Doug McBurney, right on the big drum crash, the great big rock and roll bridge there. All right. Now we go from the decline and fall to the tough religion file. Yes, sometimes love is tough. Sometimes love is tough. You've probably heard the story this week, as reported here on WorldNet Daily, The former sports physician Larry Nassar. Have you kept up with this? He was the doctor for the United States Olympic gymnastics team. He's been sentenced to 175 years in prison for abusing more than 150 young American gymnasts. Yeah, 175 years. That's including 45 years for all the child porn that was found on his computer. This was a doctor for the U.S. Gymnastics team. Rachel Denhollander, the first of the young women to publicly accuse this pervert of abusing her, testified against him in court at the sentencing phase, and she said the following: "I pray you experience the soul-crushing weight of guilt so you may someday experience true repentance and forgiveness from God, which you need far more than forgiveness from me." Yeah, she says the Bible speaks of a final judgment where all of God's wrath and eternal terror is poured out on men like you. Should you ever reach the point of truly facing what you have done, the guilt will be crushing. And then she goes on to say that's what makes the gospel of Christ so sweet. You can be forgiven, she tells this perverted scumbag. Now, if only someone could arrange for him to meet God immediately, if not sooner. I mean, how many girls do you have to molest before we kill you? Well, in my circle, one. In my family, one. You molest one, you're dead. This guy molests 150 girls, and he gets this ridiculous, comical 175-year sentence. And by the way, any of you who think that means he'll never get out of prison, I wouldn't bet your house on it. As long as this bastard is allowed to live, there's a chance. Well, just being alive, he doesn't deserve that. That is a bridge too far that he should be allowed to live. He should have no liberty, and to ensure he has no liberty, his life should be taken from him. And I hope he comes to repentance and all that, too. I'd be happy to preach the gospel to him as we lead him up onto the gallows. Anyway, good for her. Good for this young lady for presenting some tough religion, because that might get a guy this twisted and sick. That might get his attention. Have somebody tell him that the wrath and terror of the eternal God is coming down on you, buddy. All right. Now, let us go from there to reason number 1,118 to keep get your children out of the government schools. The editor of the Marshall County Daily Online down in Benton, Kentucky, got word that there was a school shooting. Shots fired. So she raced to the high school to report on the school shooting last Tuesday morning, only to discover that the shooter was her own son. 15-year-old Gabe Parker shot 16 people. Did anybody hear about this story this week? 16 people shot at a school in Kentucky? I barely heard about it. Two people were killed. 14 people were wounded. He opened fire on his classmates just before classes were to begin last Tuesday morning. And the news ladies, turns out it was her. The only reason I found this story was because of this odd angle that the news reporter was the mom. Otherwise, I might not have even, I heard a blip on the radio. That's all I heard. And now let's go to Disneyland, where the shooter was charged as a juvenile with 2 counts of murder, 12 counts of assault. But prosecutors insist that he will be tried as an adult, because we live in a fantasy land where we can't execute a 15-year-old, even if he shot 14 people, killed two of them. We have to act like he's an adult. Well, why can't we execute him as a 15-year-old teenager? Preach the gospel to him, tell him about the wrath of God and the forgiveness available in Jesus Christ, and then execute him as a 15-year-old, an adolescent. It's because the lawyers who are running the show have set up a system where we have to lie and tell each other ridiculous things in order to achieve some measure of what they call justice, but it's not justice. This kid will not be executed for what he did. All right, that's reason number 1,118, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Now we go to reason number 1,119, to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. A physical education teacher in the Los Angeles Unified School District stripped naked on campus last Friday and proceeded to chase the children around the playground. Uh-huh. That's it. A passing construction worker captured the video on his cell phone of the teacher putting his pants back on in the middle of the playground. Parents were later notified of the incident via robocall, and a letter was sent home because there wasn't anyone in the school district who actually wanted to stand face to face with any of the parents and have to try to explain what just happened. Mental health counselors were made available to the children following the incident. Right. school says they're continuing to investigate. They say this man technically was not a teacher. He was a contracted employee, employee who works for the district's STAR education program, whatever that is.
Yeah, what is
a whole new, I think he was auditioning for RuPaul's Drag Queen All-Stars, maybe. I don't know. STAR education. Reason number 1,119, your student's teacher may strip naked and start chasing him around like a maniac. And, of course, we know reason number one to get or keep your children out of the government schools is that it is officially godless. And it will insidiously seek to destroy any godliness you try to instill in your child. That's reason number one. Reason number two, of course, your child may be shot dead by another student. And then we've been doing this for several years. We're up to reason number 1,119. And if you need that many reasons, well, you might be a little slow on the uptake. Let's just put it that way. All right. Now, we have a gender researcher. and this is not someone who studies the varying uses of pronouns in various media. This is someone who studies mentally deranged people who go through sex change operations. And his name is James Caspian. Oddly enough, James Caspian is a psychologist specializing in therapy for transgendered people. Well, he launched a study in order to record data on people who regret having undergone gender reassignment. And, well, now he says the university has basically defunded his research. They've told him that the subject was potentially politically incorrect and risked triggering attacks on the researcher and the school on social media. And so his research was stopped and defunded over at Bath Spa University. Bath Spa University. This is in England. Anyway, he's having a big fight with the school, but it's over some other issue, money. Why did I even bring this story up? I don't know. Oh, Bath Spa University says that this fellow's research had been rejected on methodological and not political grounds, but the professor disagrees. And so just the fact that I have to do that story is, it's fairly disconcerting. It's not. Let's move on to President Trump. I was doing some show prep before. I saw they have a list of Donald Trump's top 140 accomplishments during his first year in office. And number two was his pro-life efforts. Pro-life efforts. Yeah. And then when they fleshed them out, they were a little bit thin, and you had to be willing to believe some pretty ridiculous things to believe that Donald Trump was pro-life. Although he does fit well in the pro-life industry. That is the industry that makes its living convincing other people that they're pro-life and we're winning. We're pro-life and we're winning. Send me $5. Trump fits right into that. Anyway, this doesn't have anything to do with the wholesale massacre of innocent children that Donald Trump fully funded just a couple weeks ago. No, less than 2 weeks ago. After the government shutdown, Donald Trump signed a continuing resolution that fully funds the largest child-killing organization in America. So add that to your list of Donald Trump's pro-life bona fides. Fully funding Planned Parenthood. But in addition to that, here from the politics file, Trump sent out a congratulatory letter to the Log Cabin Republicans. Are you familiar with this organization, he said, to his extremely attractive audio engineer. You're not familiar with the Log Cabin Republicans? The Log Cabin Republicans are a group of homosexual Republicans who, basically, their name is a backhanded, disgusting insult to the 16th president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, implying that he was some kind of queer. Because everyone knows that that Abraham Lincoln grew up and educated himself in a log cabin in Illinois, I believe it was. So the Log Cabin Republicans, established in 1976, celebrated their 40th anniversary with a congratulatory letter from America's champion of family values, Donald J. Trump, says, quote, I send my congratulations. I can't do Donald Trump. You know, I never could do Barack Obama till he left office. And then I finally started to get out the Barack Obama mannerisms. I finally was able to pull together a little bit of a Barack Obama impression. Although, to properly do Barack Obama, one must, of course, add the reverb, as Barack Obama often did in so many of his speeches, as he called for a great and wonderful and unified America. But I can't do a Donald Trump. I don't know why. I'm not going to try. I'll just read.
Yeah.
I send my congratulations to the Log Cabin Republicans on the celebration of your 40th anniversary. I'm sorry. That's just... I apologize. He wrote a letter. He says, we are a nation founded on blah, 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 equality, blah, blah. We're equal in the eyes of our Creator. We're equal under the law, and we're all equal under the Constitution. Now listen to what Donald Trump says to this pile of fags. For crying out loud. I know you people probably think that I'm a highly intolerant person. But I truly believe that the ascendancy of homosexuality is the greatest threat to our civilization in the history of civilization. And if you disagree with me, you're simply not a student of history. Donald Trump says to the organization, one of the organizations dedicated to the destruction of our civilization, he says, no matter the color of our skin or our sexual orientation, we are all made in the image of the same Almighty God. So here's Donald Trump lumping in colored folks with homosexual perverts and having the audacity to mention the Almighty God in the same sentence. I'm surprised that he wasn't struck by lightning. Doug McBurney, welcome back welcome to reality. Yes, this is reality. Full on reality, staring you right in the face. When you tune into the Weekly Worldview, you are going to get a dose of unabashed reality, which can tend to sometimes be perceived and construed as politically incorrect. Now, we go to the schizo religion file, where I'm going to talk about the Pope. Yes, I use the word schizo and the Pope in the same sentence, because the Pope is just a schizo. Pope Francis has conferred the title of Commander of the Pontifical Equestrian Order of St. Gregory the Great.
What?
Yes, that's all on the little medal that he pinned on the lapel of one Lilian Ploumen, a Dutch politician. Which, that doesn't seem schizophrenic until you find out who Lilian Ploumen is. Ploumen founded a pro-abortion organization called She Decides. Yeah. It's called She Decides. Which offers funding to facilitate or campaign for the killing of innocent children in the womb. Ploumen views the honor as a sign of the Pope's progressivism and an acknowledgement for her work in supporting the murder of innocent children, which the article euphemistically refers to as abortion, but we all know what it is. It's the wholesale slaughter of defenseless innocent children and... Well, that's what it is. That's what she is. That's what she does. Ploumen said the award came after much personal investment in contacts with the Vatican, which she defined as lobbying. So she lobbied for the award, and she got it. Pinned upon her chest was the Commander of the Pontifical Equestrian Order of St. Gregory the Great, which is a medal that the Pope hands out, obviously rather haphazardly, or one would hope. The Order of St. Gregory the Great was founded by Pope Gregory the 16th in 1831 under the patronage of Pope St. Gregory the 1st. It is bestowed on those who have distinguished themselves in public service or given lots of money to the church. Oh, I'm sorry. Given lots of support to the church. The words of the rite that were recited as she was awarded the medal or whatever she got, the priest has to stand up in the corner, might even be a cardinal. She might be the guy, not the guy with the tall hat, but the guy with the really tall hat. Lots of beads, embroidery and all that. So he had to say the following words as they pinned a medal on an abortionist. This is a reward for service and unswerving fidelity to God, fighting evil, promoting good, and defending the weak and oppressed against injustice. She had to say that with a straight face. Defending the oppressed and weak against injustice? Really? The approval for this particular award must be given by the Pope himself. So the Pope had to sign off on that one. Which, to me, is not a sign of the Pope's progressivism, as this abortionist maniac says. To me, it's a sign of his schizophrenia, because he also says he's pro-life and he's against abortion. You know, he's kind of like Donald Trump. He says he's against it, but he doesn't lift a finger to stop a single incident of child killing. In fact, he pins medals on or gives money to those who facilitate and promote it. Spokesman for the Holy See Press Office said the medal was, well, it's just a part of an exchange of honors because she came along with the king and it really doesn't mean anything. The spokesmouth there for the Vatican says, oh, this is not the slightest, in the slightest, a placet to the politics in favor of abortion and birth control that Mrs. Ploumen promotes. It's not that at all. It's something else. She had 30 straight days at the Vatican without bad breath. Or something. She gets a medal. I don't know. Ploumen most recently urged homosexuals to disrupt mass in a Dutch cathedral after an openly homosexual deviant man was denied Holy Communion back in 2010. So she'll probably get a medal for that if she lobbies hard enough. Just tell me where to send the check, Monsignor. We'll work on that. Now, from the science, really... But I hope not, file. File names are getting a bit extraneous. This is from the Real Science, But I Hope Not, file. A series of studies have shown a sharp decline in the sperm count of men during the last few decades. And one researcher has made the bleak prediction that the human race could be infertile within 50 years. Yeah, and this story was reported on a number of different news articles. And this isn't the first time we've covered this. But I may not have talked about it on the air, because talking about sperm counts makes me somewhat uncomfortable, that's all. something I prefer not to discuss. But now this is a really, this is, listen, most recently, a 2017 study by scientists at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem analyzed data from 43,000 North American, European, Australian, and New Zealander men and concluded that the average sperm count had fallen by almost 60% over the past 40 years. And then they go into why this might be happening. Nowhere do they mention marijuana. It's not mentioned anywhere, by the way. Instead, they say habits associated with the modern lifestyle, consumption of alcohol, smoking, obesity, the use of antidepressants, wearing tight pants, and the electromagnetic radiation from Wi-Fi routers are all suspect, along with the consumption of ibuprofen. Consumption of ibuprofen, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know what the deal is, but this seems like fairly compelling clinical evidence that there's something afoot that's not good. Now, could we actually go infertile within the next 50 years? Well, I suppose we could, which that's kind of depressing. I mean, I'm definitely more worried about this than I am about climate change. I'm going to get off the ibuprofen.
Oh, wait. We're kind of old.
Well, I guess I don't wear tight pants. I haven't worn tight pants since the 80s. So anyway, maybe I got nothing to worry about. Yeah, I guess fertility's not really a top shelf problem. So here we go. Now from the decline and fall file, I've had a screen pop up on my computer. And now I've got to get rid of it so that I can continue. I have to answer a few questions here. Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen. There we go. I'm back. From the decline and fall file, two Army captains who met at West Point returned there to be married in January. That's a delightful story. Yes. Captain Daniel Hall met Captain Vincent Francino at West Point. And both are now Apache helicopter pilots. Uh-huh. Well, they were married at West Point's Cadet Chapel, January 13th, 2018. Welcome to the brave new world. Their first date, can I even do this? Their first date was in February of 2012, after the don't ask, don't tell policy was repealed by Barack Obama. We have a quote from one of the two perverts. They were asked about the don't ask, don't tell policy. And one of them said, quote, "It's really frustrating when two people have feelings for each other, but they're not allowed to act on them. We were serving under a policy that was telling all of us, perfectly capable soldiers, airmen, seamen, and Marines, to lie about ourselves." The men, we use that term euphemistically, they wore their uniforms during the ceremony right there at West Point in front of God and everybody. They were married in the chapel at West Point, for crying out loud. All right. Now, here's a story of some import, I think. And this is from the Real Science file. The French Press Association reports that studies and common sense say that stifling a sneeze is dangerous. If you're going to sneeze, just sneeze. Yes, they say stifling a sneeze can rupture your throat, burst an eardrum, or pop a blood vessel in your brain. A sneeze. Yes, they say a sneeze has a surprisingly explosive force. Uh-huh. A recent story here, a 34-year-old man ended up in the emergency room in Leicester, England, with a swollen neck, extreme pain. He described a popping sensation in his neck after he tried to halt a sneeze by pinching his nose and holding his mouth closed. Well, the force of the suppressed sneeze had ruptured and torn open the back of this poor guy's throat. He was tube-fed. He had to be tube-fed and given intravenous antibiotics. But he survived. In rare cases, stifling a sneeze has led to a condition in which air gets trapped between the lungs and even rupture and can even rupture a cerebral aneurysm. You never want to hear that word, aneurysm. Anyway, I have actually physically scared people with my sneeze, because when I feel a sneeze coming on, I go all the way. You better back off. I mean, I do try to direct the eruption in a neutral direction, but I get everything I can out of every sneeze, because I'm convinced that the sneeze is an important method of purging one's body of toxins and irritants. I do. I believe that. So if you're ever in a room and I sneeze, it might scare you. And I apologize in advance, but I'm not going to have an aneurysm. All right. Let's see here. What do we have? Finally, I really didn't want to do any more questions or any more stories. I see I took ibuprofen. And now I'm they say it leads to dull thinking. And I keep grabbing the wrong word. And here I'm trying to do a show where people are actually listening to every word, and I sound like a complete idiot. So let's go to the justice file, because I don't want to talk about the queers anymore. I'm sick of them. An actor who stabbed his girlfriend almost 24 times near San Diego back in 2010 has been found suitable for parole. This guy was sentenced to 14 years to life. His name is, let's see here. He was Shelly Malil. He was convicted 7 years ago of stabbing Kendra Beebe 23 times with a large kitchen knife in San Marcos, in North County there in San Diego. And I guess because he didn't kill her, they give him 14 years to life and he's out in 9. For stabbing someone 23 times with a kitchen knife. To me, that's shocking. This guy should have been executed within 72 hours of his adjudication. And he should have had the gospel preached to him. The whole part about all the wrath and eternal terror of God coming down upon you. And the availability of forgiveness in Jesus Christ. At which point we are going to introduce you, sir, to Jesus Christ. But no, instead, he's going to get out. And this guy was some kind of famous actor. He was in a movie. They say what movie he's in, but I never saw it. I have no idea who this fellow was. It doesn't matter to me who he was. You stab somebody one time with a kitchen knife, you should be put to death, whether you succeed in killing them or not. And it is this state of justice in America that is causing borderline unstable people to choose murder and attempted murder as a means of solving some immediate problem that they have. And it's led to the killing of two police officers here in Denver in less than a month. And the lawyers running this joint should be held accountable for this. And I'm talking the lawyers from the executive office all the way down to the Congress, all the way to the State House, all of them should be held to account. And they will be one day by the living God. But I hope in my lifetime, we all have the opportunity to hold these deranged lawyers accountable for the deadly and destructive environment they have created for me and my children. I'm sick of it, and I don't think we should have to tolerate it. And I hope you'll stay tuned so that we can figure out how to get ourselves out of this and how to set things right again. And that's it for the show. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Denver Bible Church, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.